Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and the following 60 minutes or so is an excerpt from the One Step Beyond show from August 18th, 1996. The basic focus is the intelligence community, the national security establishment, not only of this country but other countries, and gene splicing, and perhaps the deliberate spreading of genetically engineered biological warfare weapons. The first thing I'm going to read in connection with the possibility of actual genetically engineered microorganisms being used to infect people today is an article that appeared in the Townsend Letter for Doctors in Press, 1995. That's not a publication I know anything about. This is an article entitled Chronic Fatigue Illnesses Associated with Service in Operation Desert Storm, subtitled Were Biological Weapons Used Against Our Forces in the Gulf War? This is authored by Garth L. Nicholson, N-I-C-O-L-S-O-N, Ph.D., and Nancy L. Nicholson, N-I-C-O-L-S-O-N, Ph.D., researchers with the University of Texas M.D. Anderson Cancer Center in Houston, Texas, and the Rodon, R-H-O-D-O-N, Foundation for Biomedical Research in Kingwood, Texas, and their various other credits and honoraria that these two doctors have. The doctors stress in regard to Gulf War syndrome that there are in all probability many different causes, including exposure to native parasites and infective organisms, possible breathing of very fine sand particles, exposure to some of the petroleum smoke, the possibility that biological weapons may have either been launched, biological munitions launched against our forces in the Persian Gulf War, or the possibility that chemical and or biological weapons may have been used to may have infected our forces accidentally when they were destroyed during the course of the combat. Indeed, I wondered about that at the time. When you drop high explosive munitions on nuclear and chemical and biological warfare facilities, one would think that it would spread that stuff around. The authors have also come across in many of the service people that have been affected by GWS, Gulf War Syndrome, an infectious mycoplasma. That is a form of bacterium, a microorganism that can infect human beings and cause disease. However, the mycoplasmas that were detected by these researchers appear to have been genetically altered by somebody for some reason to make them more infectious. Again, this paper is entitled, oops, let me get back to the title page here. Bloody, here we go. This is from the Townsend Letter for Doctors in Press, 1995. Chronic fatigue illnesses associated with service in Operation Desert Storm. Were biological weapons used against our forces in the Gulf War? And skipping well down into the article, after a discussion of the probability that multiple causes exist for Gulf War syndrome, we find... After listening to the health complaints of many veterans of Desert Shield and Storm, including our stepdaughter, who served with the Army's 101st Airborne Division, Air Assault, in the deep insertions into Iraq, and their inability to convince military hospitals and VA medical centers that they are suffering from the same major symptoms listed in Figure 2, we suggested that most of these symptoms can be explained by aggressive, pathogenic mycoplasma infections. The variable incubation time of GWS, ranging from months to years after presumed exposure, the cyclic nature of the relapsing fevers and other symptoms are consistent with a disease caused by biological agent or agents. We strongly suspected that mycoplasmas, a group of small microorganisms related to bacteria but without cell walls, some of which can invade cells, might be involved in some of the GWS. In general, this type of microorganism can cause chronic infections that yield unusual signs and symptoms. Usually, mycoplasma infections produce diseases limited to particular tissue sites or organs, such as urinary tract or respiratory infections. However, the types of mycoplasmas that we have detected in Desert Storm veterans and that may be causing the chronic fatigue and other symptoms in GWS are very pathogenic, colonize a variety of organs and tissues, and are difficult to treat. Even pathogenic mycoplasmas that can invade cells and tissues, such as Mycoplasma fermentans, F-E-R-M-E-N-T-A-N-S, incognitus strain, or Mycoplasma penetrans, should be treatable with multiple courses of oral antibiotics, such as doxycycline or ciprofloxacin. In the absence of sensitive and reliable clinical tests for invasive mycoplasmas, we suggested that physicians consider empirical treatment of GWS with antibiotics like doxycycline. In fact, of the 73 Desert Storm veterans that we followed who had most of the signs and symptoms listed in Figure 2 and were able to find treatment, 55 indicated that they had good responses with doxycycline and they eventually returned to normal duty. The invasive pathogenic mycoplasmas that are associated with service in Operation Desert Storm are not easily detected, but can be identified by a technique that we developed called gene tracking. In patients with GWS, gene tracking starts with the preparation of the nucleoprotein complex fractions from leukocyte nuclei of GWS patients' blood. By the way, much of this is Greek to me, not being medically and scientifically versed in this field. I'm simply presenting it for those who are. Once the blood leukocytes are obtained, their nuclei are prepared and exposed to a restriction enzyme, MSPL, that cuts DNA at specific sites to release specific nucleoprotein complexes. The nucleoprotein complexes are then separated by native, non-denaturing, low ionic strength gel electrophoresis in the absence of chelating agents and transferred onto a Nitran paper support. Once they are immobilized on the Nitran paper, they can then be probed using a radioisotope labeled, usually oligonucleotide, that will only bind to a specific DNA sequence. In the example shown in Figure 4, we have probed the nucleoprotein fractions obtained from the blood leukocytes of a GWS patient with a probe specific for Mycoplasma fermentans in cognitus strain. In Figure 4, a mycoplasma-specific gene that was found in nucleoprotein fraction M1 purified from the leukocyte nuclei of a GWS patient. This suggests that the mycoplasma has penetrated deep into the nucleus of the patient's blood cells. In our preliminary study on veterans with GWS, CFIDS, and their families, we have found evidence of mycoplasma infections in about 55% of the GWS patient's blood leukocytes. All of these GWS patients were very ill, so it is unlikely that approximately one half of all veterans with GWS have mycoplasmal infections. In addition, not every Desert Storm veteran has the same type of mycoplasma gene sequences inside their leukocytes. So far, the majority of the mycoplasma gene sequences that have been identified in GWS patients' blood are from mycoplasma fermentans in cognitus strain. As discussed above, pathogenic invasive mycoplasmas such as M. fermentans in cognitus strain or M. penetrans should be treatable with multiple courses of antibiotics such as doxycycline. Of the Desert Storm veterans who had most of the GWS CFIDS symptoms listed in Figure 2, most had good response with doxycycline and after multiple courses of antibiotics eventually recovered. And, skipping down, we consider it quite likely that many of the Gulf War veterans suffering from the GWS CFIDS symptoms may have been infected with microorganisms, quite possibly pathogenic invasive mycoplasms and other pathogens or bacteria, and such infections can produce the symptoms shown in Figure 2 long after exposure. This would also explain the apparently mildly contagious nature of GWS in some veterans and the appearance of similar GWS-CFIDS symptoms in their immediate family members. In our preliminary study on a small number of Gulf War veterans and their families, we have found evidence of mycoplasmic infections in about one-half of the patient's blood that we have examined. Not every Gulf War veteran had the same type of mycoplasma DNA sequences inside their white blood cells. Of particular importance, however, was our detection, and this is the really important part of this article. Again, much of the rest of it is frankly Greek to me and not being versed in this field. Of particular importance, however, was our detection of highly unusual DNA sequences in the same nucleoprotein complex fractions by the same gene tracking technique. These highly unusual DNA sequences included a portion of a retrovirus genome, the HIV-1-ENV gene, but not all of the genes that make up the virus. Thus, these soldiers were not infected with the HIV virus, because the virus cannot replicate with only the gene that we detected. Interestingly, the specific DNA sequence that we detected encodes a protein that, if expressed on the surface of the mycoplasma, would enable the mycoplasma to bind to many cell types in the body and even enter those cells by an endocytotic mechanism similar to that used by the HIV virus. The presence of the viral envelope gene in the mycoplasma could be due to genetic manipulation or, much less likely, natural causes, but the importance of this event would be that a relatively benign mycoplasma could be converted to a much more invasive and pathogenic organism that is capable of attacking many organ and tissue systems. Such findings suggest that the mycoplasmas that we have found in Gulf War veterans are not naturally occurring organisms, or to be more specific, they could have been genetically manipulated to be more invasive and pathogenic, potent biological weapons. Of course, the CFIDS-like symptoms can be the result of chemical exposures as well as chronic infections, and this would be consistent with our findings of pathogenic microorganisms in the blood of a fraction of soldiers who have GWS. In our sample of Gulf War veterans, the soldiers that were involved in the deep insertions into Iraq and those that were near Saudi and Kuwaiti Scud B impact sites, particularly those missiles that caused airbursts but not high explosive ground bursts, may be at highest risk for contracting the mycoplasma infections that we feel are a major culprit in GWS, CFIDS. And again, that type of microorganism, a mycoplasma, appears to have one of the genes from the HIV virus in it, and the authors suggest very strongly that that particular mycoplasma may have been genetically engineered by party or parties unknown, and then found its way into many of our service people, many of our troops in the Persian Gulf, whether as a result of the destruction of biological weapon stockpiles in Iraq, or whether as the result of Scud explosions or BW munitions that were used against our troops or whatever. It certainly is intriguing, and again, I think qualified people should look into the research done by the Nicholsons to determine the possible origin of those genetically engineered, apparently genetically engineered mycoplasms containing parts of the HIV virus. Now, I have done in RFA 16 a long, by the way, RFA 16 was first put together in April of 1986, and in turn accessed or entailed research that I have been accessing on the air since 1984, that AIDS may very well be the result of biological engineering. Indeed, that hypothesis has since been taken up by a great many researchers, including some of those cited by R. Roy Blake. And again, the archive show RFA 16, AIDS, Epidemic or Weapon of War, goes into some of the documentation. There is a new book, and an extremely important book, and a lavishly documented book, that fits right along the lines of inquiry that I had engaged in RFA 16. Again, a listener to this program suggested that I rename the program from One Step Beyond to I Told You So. And that should not be interpreted in any way as being arrogant, but rather one can determine reality from the nature of facts. And if one thinks with an open mind, I think there are an awful lot of things that become clear that would not otherwise become clear. I want to emphatically endorse and recommend a new book. I have not finished it yet, but I've read long sections of it. I'm going to be accessing excerpts of it on the air. I'm going to be interviewing the author on more than one occasion. This book is called Emerging Viruses. In fact, you heard about the you heard the reference to the phrase emerging viruses in that passage by Objective Evil by R. Roy Blake that I read. The book Emerging Viruses, subtitled AIDS and Ebola, Nature, Accident, or Intentional, is authored by Dr. Leonard G. Horowitz, H-O-R-O-W-I-T-Z, with a foreword by Dr. John Martin, M-A-R-T-I-N. It's published in hardcover by Tetrahedron Incorporated. That's spelled T-E-T-R-A-H-E-D-R-O-N Incorporated. they can be contacted. And again, I would strongly encourage you to have your local retail book outlets pick up or stock this book. Tetrahedron Incorporated can be contacted at P.O. Box 402, Rockport, Massachusetts, 01966. Once again, Tetrahedron Incorporated, P.O. Box 402, Rockport, Massachusetts, 01966. There is also an 800 number that you can call, 800-336-9266. Once again, 800-336-9266. There is also an email for Tetrahedron, tetra@tetrahedron.org. Once again, that's tetra, T-E-T-R-A, at tetrahedron.org. There's also a web page, http://www.tetrahedron.org. Once again, that web page, http://www.tetrahedron.org. And again, this book is entitled Emerging Viruses, AIDS and Ebola, Nature, Accident, or Intentional. It's a remarkable book, which in many ways, I guess you could say, presents the smoking gene, one could say. It really fleshes out the working hypothesis that I had presented as far back as 1984 and included in RFA 16, that AIDS may very well be the result of genetic engineering and a man-made virus. This book goes into many of the things that I had discussed in RFA 16, including the National Cancer Institute's Viral Cancer Research Program, Litton Bionetics, the National Cancer Institute's Molecular Oncology Laboratory located on the site of Fort Detrick, and develops the lines of inquiry that I had presented in RFA 16 at considerable length. It implicates the National Cancer Institute's VCRP, Litton Bionetics, and a number of other institutions in the creation of AIDS, and also discusses Ebola as a deliberately created virus. Beyond that, it traces the origin of these apparently man-made viruses, whether accidentally discovered and then intentionally communicated, or whether accidentally discovered and accidentally transmitted. This book makes an excellent case, a formidable case, that these viruses are not naturally occurring viruses. And beyond that, there is extensive discussion of the Galen Organization, the Project Paperclip scientists, and traces the genesis of many of the research programs that appear to have resulted in AIDS and Ebola to the importation of the Galen people and the Project Paperclip scientists. I'm going to begin by reading several pages of the conclusion that is presented here by Dr. Leonard Horowitz. In the conclusion, he, in a section entitled The Intentional AIDS Transmission Theory, discusses or writes as follows. And again, I'm going to be excerpting this book for many weeks to come. I'm going to be interviewing the author on numerous occasions. I can't emphasize this book too strongly. This is one of the most important books in a long, long time. In fact, I'd say this is the most important book I've discussed in the last 25 minutes. There are a lot of really important books coming out. Objective Evil, Blood Oath. This book is fantastically important, and in many ways, Dr. Horowitz commented, began to familiarize himself with my work, this book appears to fall right along the lines that I have been presenting not only in RFA 16, but other broadcasts as well. In The Intentional AIDS Transmission Theory, the author writes as follows. It has been theorized, and circumstantial evidence in this book supports the theory, that black Africans and American homosexuals may have been targeted for viral weapons experimentation by activists in America's military, medical, industrial complex, and agents for the CIA. According to the Church Commission hearings, Henry Kissinger and, by association, Elmo Zumwalt or Melvin Laird and Sidney Gottlieb, by the way, Gottlieb was discussed in the Objective Evil passage, and Sidney Gottlieb ordered or administered the development and or stockpiling of biological weapons, including immune system destroying viruses functionally identical to HIV, and the deployment of systems necessary to administer these viruses to large populations. Frank Carlucci, Joseph Califano, and Alexander Haig may also have been involved. The principal military scientists and industrialists involved in the development, study, and or possible deployment of AIDS-like viruses, which may have included Ebola and Marburg-like rhabdoviruses, that's spelled R-H-A-B-D-O-V, then viruses, include Robert Gallo of the National Cancer Institute, John Landon and Robert Ting of Linton Bionetics, Litton Industries President Roy Ash, research affiliates of MSD, including Maurice Hilleman, and a handful of researchers at the New York University Medical Center, the New York City Blood Bank, the University of California, and the Center for Disease Control. Additional institutions which may have played a role in the development of such germs during the 1960s and early 1970s include the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, the Navy's Biomedical Research Laboratory, Hazleton Laboratories Incorporated, the NIAID, and the ABC, and the AEC, excuse me. It is likely that most of the scientists involved in developing such viruses for military contractors, the NCI, the CIA, and the Special Operations Division of the Army, believed they were serving the interests of national security or humanity. The question of their supervisors' purposes, motivations, and intent can only be fully answered through a congressional inquiry. With regard to the theory of intentional AIDS transmission for population control, undoubtedly, the motives and mechanisms existed to support this possibility. The evidence shows a channel through which experimental mutant viruses, viral vaccines, other reagents, and drugs flowed between the NCI, that's the National Cancer Institute, and affiliated testing laboratories at Litton Bionetics and Fort Detrick to MSD and its related research labs in New York and Central Africa was the drug development branch of the NCI. By the way, MSD is the company that has supplied the vaccines to the United States Army and has been at the core of much of the BW research that has been conducted in this country. Continuing. Through this channel or another, the CIA or a saboteur may have delivered a single roller bottle. Through this channel or another, the CIA, by the way, by extension, I would say the intelligence community, because the CIA is only gets only 15% of our intelligence budget. We have numerous intelligence agencies, and many researchers automatically and incorrectly equate the CIA with the U.S. intelligence community. Again, there's the NSA, the DIA, ONI, OSI, and plenty of others. Beginning again. So I think perhaps in most texts, including this one, one should perhaps substitute intelligence community for, or U.S. intelligence community for CIA, or perhaps even a faction of U.S. intelligence, because it's highly factionalized. Beginning again. Through this channel or another, the CIA or a saboteur may have delivered a single roller bottle containing AIDS viruses to experimental vaccine producers or directly to Merck's hepatitis B and perhaps other multi-component vaccines, the vaccines that appear to have played a principal role in infecting scores of human subjects in the early 1970s in New York City, Central Africa, and other regions of the world hardest hit by AIDS. Also, considering Merck, Sharp, and Dohme's relationship with the military and its economic competitor, the Institut Pasteur Production, in contrast to previous theories on the initial international spread of AIDS from Central Africa through needle sticks or homosexual practices, covert operations by the CIA, contaminated vaccines, and even industrial espionage, may explain the rapid progress of the epidemic to African, European, South American, and Eastern nations. Given the Cold War climate in the 1970s, the believed strategic importance of Central Africa and the activities to promote military and economic dependence of several black nations, in particular the resource-wealthy regions of Angola and Zaire, the use of HIV and Ebola as biological weapons to affect military, economic, and, quote, national security, unquote, objectives, including population control, must be considered. This theory is bolstered by the following facts. As National Security Advisor under Nixon in 1969, Henry Kissinger ordered a reassessment of America's biological weapons capabilities from which the option to develop immune system-destroying viruses was selected. Such viruses were to be used when necessary to keep U.S. military, quote, visibility to a minimum, unquote, during a, quote, gray, unquote, area operation intended to influence, quote, certain events of potentially global importance, unquote. Shortly following their development, Kissinger also ordered the CIA, whose scientists developed and stockpiled numerous deadly viruses for Project MK Naomi, to conduct covert military operations in the Zaire-Angola arena, the region of Africa hardest hit by the AIDS and Ebola epidemics. The Defense Department and NCI paid Litton Bionetics, as supervised by Dr. Robert Gallo at the NCI and other affiliated biological weapons contractors, millions of dollars during the 1960s and early 1970s to produce immune system depleting and cancer-causing viruses. These would include the viruses with the pathological effects of the HIVs and the hemorrhagic fever viruses Ebola and Marburg. U.S. congressional documents confirm the CIA obtained dozens of biological weapons, including deadly viruses, and illegally maintained them in storage facilities on the grounds of Fort Detrick as late as 1975. Thereafter, they possibly retained private firms for such purposes, despite all such actions being illegal. CIA chiefs acknowledged their likely use of biological weapons through covert operations long after the ratification of the Geneva Accord by Kissinger and Nixon, despite knowledge that all such actions were illegal. The CIA conducted dozens of biological warfare experiments on hundreds of thousands of unsuspecting human subjects, both domestically and in foreign lands. DOD biological weapons contractors Merck and or Litton Bionetics conducted numerous AIDS-like virus and vaccine experiments during the 1960s and early 1970s simultaneously in New York City and or Central Africa, the two areas hardest hit by the AIDS epidemic. Population control was deemed a high-priority foreign policy and national security objective during the late 1960s and early 1970s by the then Honorable George Bush of Texas. More recently, groups active in the Council on Foreign Relations have urged policymakers and industrialists to reduce even the size of the U.S. population to between 125 and 150 million people, quote, or about its size in the 1940s, unquote. The fact that the epidemic overwhelmingly and specifically struck groups that had been consistently targeted by American intelligence agencies does not necessarily give more weight to the intentional transmission theory, since MSD and other military vaccine producers routinely used black Africans, prisoners, and other high-risk groups for vaccine experiments. The author then goes on, Leonard Horowitz then goes on to describe the accidental alternative. By the way, he is of the impression from conversations that it was deliberately introduced into populations. It is highly plausible that the earliest AIDS, but he also presents another possibility, which he holds open. It's one of the things I like about this book. It covers all of the bases, and it's lavishly documented from an historical standpoint and also from a scientific standpoint. And again, this book is like old home week for listeners to this program. He talks about the Galen Organization, the Project Paperclip scientists, the Rat Line, the Knights of Malta. It's quite a piece of work, and it's a very exciting and critically important book. Now, the next section here is called The Accidental Alternative. It is highly plausible that the earliest AIDS, Ebola, Marburg, and Reston viral outbreaks occurred accidentally. The most common source of these outbreaks was not African monkeys per se, but more specifically, African primates inoculated with such viruses and subsequently exported by Litton Bionetics for vaccine production, cancer studies, and biological weapons research. The weight of evidence, then, falls on Litton, the principal military, medical, industrial, quote, support services, unquote, provider to all NCI contractors, including MSD, the New York University Medical Center, Hazleton Laboratories Incorporated, Davis Laboratories, and others. Given the number of documented laboratory outbreaks alone in 1967, 1976, 1978, and 1989, all associated with specific monkey species supplied by Litton Bionetics or Litton monkey cohabitants, it is reasonable to conclude that an independent investigation of the records and quarantine facilities of Litton's foreign and domestic primate research and supply centers is in order. Another concern regarding vaccine production facilities and their products is the fact that government and industry standards disregarded simian virus contaminants. Contamination of experimental and production vaccines, including polio and others, by SV40, SFV, SIV and possibly SIV in the range of 100 particles per dose occurred routinely and, very likely, given rise to viral recombinants that might have crossed species barriers, as in many cases, they had been engineered to do through human tissue culturing.